This is Calliope Writing Coach, the podcast about writing and publishing success from every angle. I'm Angie Fenimore, international best-selling author and writing coach.
And I'm Michael Sheen, author, platform designer, and marketing master. Episode 35, 7'4" mechanic to NBA All-Star. Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Calliope Writing Coach podcast. Michael and Angie are in the house.
Good morning. Hello, I guess.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
it may
not
be
really morning.
Not morning where you're listening.
Might be morning where you are. Yeah.
Might be. It might be. So anyway, our interview today is the amazing Mark Eaton. But before we get to the interview, we want to talk to you. Angie's been working with one of our writers, and her story is set in Scotland. And her husband is also a Scot.
Mm-hmm.
And so
too right.
Angie spends one of her all-nighters like she does. And she comes up to me in the morning and says, "We're going to do a writer's retreat." And I said, "Okay, we've been talking about that. No big deal." And she goes, "In Scotland." And I said, "Okay, that's different." And she goes, "In a castle." And I went, "Okay, now I'm listening." What we've created is 7 days and 6 nights, all-inclusive, Castle in Scotland retreat.
Uh-huh. So we could invite you into our home for a week and you would crank out a spellbinding marketable book. But if you're going to dedicate a whole week learning what really works in the publishing industry and applying those skills to finish a whole draft and pitching it to top literary agents, because we are going to do that too, of course, don't you want to do it in Scotland? In a castle?
In Scotland. Absolutely. You know, Angie has reverse engineered what the masters do. They don't even know that they're doing it, but she's got it dialed in. So if you are a writer and you're ready to go pro, you want to work with Angie. She has this crazy genius that can turn anyone into an exceptional writer. You know, we're in our fourth year of doing Calliope Writing Coach, and we've led about 30 courses now. And 100% of our writers get manuscript submission requests from top deal-making agents and publishers.
Yeah, we can actually guarantee that agents and publishers will ask for your project, provided you're coachable.
Well, yeah, you do have to be coachable.
Yeah, you have to bring coachability. Yeah, and you got to be willing to do the work. But I'm telling you, we're effective. So besides training you on landing the pitch, so that you're seriously inside of that margin of less than 2%. I think it's like way less than 2%.
I think it might be. Yeah.
It is. I mean, that's kind of an old stat of writers who capture the attention of the gatekeepers. We do all of the work from the business side of being a writer as well. You know, that's one of the things that has agents and publishers asking for our writers' projects. So the thing about Michael isn't just that he's a brilliant author platform designer, which he is.
And very handsome as well.
Yes, he is. This is true. He pretty much blows his clients' minds with what he does for their branding and for their reach. So if you're a pro ready to be published, you want to work with Michael.
All right. So everybody's dying to know, Angie, why a castle in Scotland?
Yeah. So what's so great about that is that you're immersed in not only the curriculum that we teach that's so effective, but you're also immersed in inspiration that pulls for creativity. And make no mistake, even if you want to write a book to sell in the back of the room when you're speaking, you are tapping into that creative side of your brain. So this is for writers of every genre. And we'll take care of all of your meals, your snacks. And by the way, there are tea kettles and whiskey in every room.
Whiskey decanters.
I don't know that they're filled. Yeah. I had to look up what a wee dram is.
A wee dram. Yes.
Yes, you can have tea or a wee dram in your room. But anyway, we take care of all of that. So you can just focus and produce.
And the best part about it is that you get Angie and I.
That's right. You get us. By the way, we're the same off mic. As we are.
That's something, yeah. When people come to our live conferences, they're like, "Holy cow, you guys are exactly the same."
We are.
Yeah. So, you know, something that we love is that our writers and our agent and publishing partners say that we are the real deal. We are as committed to your success as you are. So we want to give you, our listeners, a bonus. When you go to the website, calliopewritingretreats.com, and fill out a contact request form, mention in the comments section that you heard about the Scotland Retreat on our podcast, and we'll also give you the Submission Possible series. This is our powerful online coaching program. It's got 12 sessions, and they are incredible.
Oh, it's incredible.
If you purchase that program separately, it would be $500, but it's going to be our free gift to you for registering. So you can start the course as soon as you book the retreat and really dial in the elements of storytelling. Learn how to create books that sell, and you'll get clarity and direction. Plus, you'll be freed up to create.
Okay, Michael, get to the good stuff. How can they book their suites?
All right, so I've told you once, but here's the website again. This is calliopewritingretreats.com. We'll also have that linked in the show notes, so you can just use that link there. You'll see all of the options there. This is first come, first serve, and we're already half full. We haven't even announced it yet. Well, I guess we just did.
Well, we're announcing it right now. Yeah. This is the announcement.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, up until now, it hasn't been announced, and it's already half full
secret,
by word of mouth, just like I've mentioned it to a couple people, and they're like, okay.
So you can stay in your own suite in the castle with a king or queen bed, and that's $6,000. Or if you've got somebody that you would like to share that bed with, you can just split the tuition of $6,000 for you and your guest. And there's also a huge loft at the top of the castle with four single beds. Those beds are for women only, and they are $4,000 each.
Yeah. You know, sorry guys, but here's the deal. You know, we've been doing this a long time, and the demographic is this. You know, we're really happy when we've got, I don't know, a handful of men in a course. And then, of course, there's like tons of women. So we decided we're not going to mix company up there in the loft. So it's women only, not because we don't like you men. We just know.
And here's the deal. If you and three of your bro friends want to hook up and make this thing happen,
get a hold of us right away.
Get a hold of us right away, and we'll just turn that whole loft into a guy's retreat.
That's
and
right.
You can make that happen too.
That's right.
So, you know, don't forget, all of these options include your meals and transportation to and from the castle from the Edinburgh airport. So all you've got to do is get yourself to Edinburgh, and we're going to have an amazing week.
Yeah, no joke.
And we would love, love, love to have you come with us.
Are you going to tell them the dates? You said you were going to tell them the dates.
I don't know the dates exactly off the
top of my head. Yes, you do. Whatever. August 28th through September 3rd.
August 28th. Through September 3rd.
But you can arrive on the 27th after 4 p.m. That would be Scotland time.
Yes.
But we won't actually start until the 28th.
Yes.
Because we're going to be, you know, preparing all of your meals. I guess we should also say this is all inclusive, by the way.
In today's interview, we're talking to Mark Eaton, NBA basketball star and now corporate speaker. He just released his book. In the interview, we talk about it, but it is out now, The Four Commitments of a Winning Team. And you can find that through Amazon or through his website at 7foot4.com. And welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Welcome. Glad to be here.
Mark, you have spoken to tens of thousands of people, and they have all had their lives transformed through hearing your astounding story of triumph and record-breaking success. Mark is a team-building expert who shares with organizations and audiences nationwide how he went from a 7'4", 21-year-old mechanic who couldn't play basketball to a 12-year career as an NBA All-Star with the Utah Jazz. He reveals the secrets that skyrocketed him to fame as the 2-time Defensive Player of the Year, enabled him to break the NBA record for the most blocked shots in a single season, and be selected to play in the 1989 All-Star Game. After his career with the Jazz, Mark went on to success after success as an entrepreneur, TV and radio talk show host, and world-class speaker, trainer, and coach. Today, Mark travels the country, employing principles and coaching techniques from his 12 years playing pro basketball to teach industry leaders, teams, and individuals how to outsmart, outlast, and outperform their competition and achieve record-breaking success. Mark enjoys horseback riding, skiing, and the outdoors. He lives in beautiful Park City, Utah with his wife, Terry, their children, Clydesdales, dogs, cats, and even a burro. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you.
So it is so exciting to have you on the show today. Tell us a little bit about your story. You know, you talk about how you didn't even play basketball in high school. Is that right?
Yeah, I sat on the bench. I grew up in Southern California, and I was always tall. You know, my parents are tall, but I didn't have much success athletically in high school, and sat at the end of the bench, and really didn't feel like I had much of a future as an athlete at all. And after high school, it was like, well, now what are you going to do? What's next? And I decided to go to trade school for a year with a buddy of mine to learn to be an auto mechanic, and did that in Arizona. Came back to Southern California after graduating and got fired from my first job at a Cadillac dealership, and then ended up in a tire and auto center in Buena Park, California. Worked there for about a year and a half, busting tires and doing tune-ups and shocks and brake jobs and front-end alignments and things like that. Mm-hmm. And one day a junior college coach from the local junior college, Cypress College, which was about 3 miles down the road, happened around the corner and saw me there and said, wow, who's this big tall guy standing here out here working as a mechanic? And it proceeded over the next couple months to convince me to give basketball another try. And he had some unique experiences working with big players, with really tall players, that he was able to show me basketball from a different perspective that I'd never considered before. And I agreed to start working out with him in the evenings, and eventually went back to junior college. 2 years there, 2 years at UCLA, and then ended up with the Utah Jazz for 12 years.
Hmm. So that was quite a change from what you expected to grow up doing, huh?
Very much so. I mean, I just figured basketball was out of the picture and it was time to just go get busy and get a job like everybody else. And my father is a marine diesel mechanic and vocational educator in Long Beach. And so the mechanical thing came naturally to me, and I was pretty happy doing that until, you know, this coach showed up and showed me basketball and showed me some things about the game that I had never considered, and really shifted my paradigm about what being a basketball player could be, and especially being a tall basketball player at 7'4". Mm. The game for big guys is needs to be taught a little differently than the guys who are the 6 foot guards.
Mm. Okay. So I have a question, and at the risk of like totally bumbling this, I got like stuck horseback riding. I've met you. I can't imagine a horse on the planet.
It would have to be a Clydesdale,
right? But
okay, my horse is well, that's a whole other story how I got into horseback riding. But my horse is a half Clydesdale, half thoroughbred. He's 17 hands. He's a big guy.
That's a big horse.
He probably weighs 1,600 pounds. And
Is that 17 of my hands or 17 of your hands?
Well, however they measure it in the world of hands, I don't know.
Because that'd be a big difference.
I think
But I can see, you know, somebody who'd say, yeah, I'm 7'4" and horseback riding, absolutely, might actually go from mechanic to basketball player, even though you know that might have been a field that you had ruled out, right? I can actually, that those two things correlate for me. I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it's been an interesting ride since retiring from basketball and living in the mountains. I actually ran some camps for at-risk youth for a number of years up in the Gravon Wilderness outside of Jackson Hole, and we rented a string of horses for the summertime, and that's how I got hooked on riding horses in the mountains. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, very cool. So since you've retired, tell us a little bit about what you've been up to.
Well, a wide variety of things. I mean, the biggest challenge of being a professional athlete is when you're retired, you know, when you do retire, you can't go back and do what you were doing. I mean, you can't, it's hard to continue in the industry unless you get a job as a coach or something like that. So you really have to sit down with a big menu and figure out, okay, what's next? And I've done a wide variety of things. I've been in the restaurant industry for 22 years. I've got two fine dining restaurants here in Salt Lake City.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Tuscany and Franks. And,
okay.
And then I got involved with the at-risk youth. I ran those programs for 14 years, working with about 3,000 to 4,000 youth a year. and did some broadcasting for a while with the Jazz. And then, I don't know, somewhere around 2008 or so, it was like, all right, what's next? And because my basketball story is so unusual, people had asked me to come and share my story with the Elks Lodge or the Kiwanis Club or the occasional corporate corporate event. But I'd never really put it together in a quote-unquote speech. And so that question raised its head of what would it be like to be a professional motivational speaker? What would that look like? And I called a few friends of mine who were doing it, got some advice, and wrote a speech with a friend of mine who's a screenwriter, and kind of started doing that. Went okay, and then eventually found a professional speaking coach in New York that took my speech completely apart and started over, but taught me how to be a business speaker. You know, that my message really needed to resonate with a business audience. Those are the ones who could afford to pay you to come, and this. That's how you make a living at speaking, obviously, is getting paid. And so I refocused, and it was not the best time to start a new business there in 2008, 2009. But it also gave me the opportunity to dig a little deeper and find the good stuff. And this coach I worked with was great at asking me questions, digging deep into the stories, and finding the little gems and treasures that so many of those writers enjoy. I'm good at being interviewed, but you know, not so great at writing. And it was a lot of hard work to really dig and find the right stories to match up with the right points. It really made a cohesive, motivating, yet actionable presentation. And we spent about 2.5 years doing that. But the result was something that's done very well for me since then.
Great. Well, you know, you bring up this point about being coachable. And, you know, what a difference that that makes in your performance, whether it's on the court, whether it's writing, whether it's speaking. And, you know, I actually, you were the keynote speaker at an HR event that I attended once when I was the HR manager at Cucina Toscana years ago.
Okay.
And I would say, yeah, you did that. You actually took, you know, this coaching and delivered, because I was moved and I was impressed.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it just, I think that your point there is a lot of people, I think, hesitate when it's when they say, oh, I need more coaching or I need to do more work on my message. I coach a lot of other people that are speakers or wannabe speakers, and probably the same is true in writing, that, you know, it's like your material has to be really, really good. There is no substitute for that. And I don't care what you've done in your life. Even if you're a great athlete, and I've seen some great ones who bomb as speakers because they don't take the time to perfect their message. And for me, the sustainability of my business has been based on the fact that I've got a great message. I deliver it consistently day in and day out. And I don't waver from that very much. I don't do things that are outside of my expertise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there comes a point where it's almost memorized, but yet, you know, if you're doing it well, you're still connected to that message every time you deliver it. You
know? Well, it's like telling stories. You know, the greatest lesson I learned about telling stories on stage was to go back and feel that story while you're delivering it.
Exactly.
So there's a point where you go from, you know, reading it to memorizing it to delivering it to really feeling it while you're delivering it. And each time I deliver it, it's a different feeling. It's a different part of a story stands
Very
out or a different line will stand out for the audience that, you know, I'd run over 10,000 times before, and all of a sudden somebody says, wow, that line really got me today. I'm like, wow, well, I guess that was the message today. So going in, I thought, well, you know, I have to write a bunch of different speeches, and yet I've been able to make a really good living with one primary presentation. I've got some other, you know, breakouts and things I do, but it goes back to the power of the writing. That's what carries it.
Well, could you share with us a couple of points from your transformational speech?
Sure. You know, so I tell the story of being this mechanic and this coach who came to my shop like 15 times to convince me to try basketball again. And along the way in my presentation, there's some distinct junctures where somebody comes along that really helps me understand what the next level is all about. And one story in particular is after I'd finished 2 years at junior college, I went to UCLA where things didn't go very well. I sat on the end of the bench. They'd recruited a lot of great players, and my dreams of being out there on Saturday afternoon in front of a national TV audience were kind of dashed early on and was relegated to the end of the bench. And after my first year there, I thought, well, this really sucks. I picked the wrong school. I got the wrong coach, this, that, and the other thing. And my junior college coach continued to get me to work. He said, look, if you're not going to play in the games, you're going to have to make the practices your game. You can't be the first guy there and the last to leave, because this isn't about what's occurring right now. We're planning for something for the future. And so I said, okay, I'll keep working, even though, you know, I don't have much success around me right now. And that summer, in between my junior and senior year, I was working out at UCLA in the old men's gym, which is that gym was probably built in 1925, something like that. It's this old three-story building. There was a men's gym and a women's gym, and every afternoon, all the players in Los Angeles would get together there. I mean, they were like NBA All-Star games, these pickup games or practice games. Mm-hmm. And so I played these games every afternoon. And one game in particular, I'm running up down the court and I'm trying to catch this guard on the other team. And his name is Rocket Rod Foster. He's like the fastest guy I've ever seen from one end of the court to the other, right? And he's getting to the basket about time. I'm going across like half court. And I'm frustrated and I can't figure this out. I'm like, geez, I'm out of the court, but I'm not really in the game. And I'm standing on the sideline for a minute and taking a break and kind of feeling sorry for myself and thinking, you know, I just don't know if I can play at this level. And at that moment, I feel this large hand on my shoulder. And I turn around, it's Wilt Chamberlain,
wow.
Who was arguably one of the greatest basketball players of all time, perhaps the greatest. And he'd retired from the NBA a few years earlier, and yet he would still come down in the afternoons and work out with the young guys. And he grabbed me by the shoulder, and he looked me in the eye. He said, first of all, young fella, you are never going to catch that man. And I said, well, thanks, Wilt. I already figured that out on my own. And he said, and then he said something profound. He said, more importantly, it's not your job. He said, come with me. Let me show you what your job is. And he grabbed me by the arm and he took me out of the basketball court and he positioned me right in front of the basket. He said, you see this basket behind you? He said, your job is to stop players from getting there. Your job is to make them miss their shot, collect the rebound, throw it, and then throw it up to the guard, let them go down the other end and score it. And your job is to cruise up to half court and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
He said, this is what your job is. This is something you could be great at. And in that moment was life-changing for me, because I understood what I needed to do out of the basketball court. Mm-hmm. So I stopped running around trying to do everything, instead focused on that one thing that I could be great at. And I went on to become one of the great defensive players in the NBA, simply because he took the time to share that with me. So I stopped running around trying to do everything and focused on that one thing. And I ended up, you know, 4 years later, breaking the NBA record for the most blocked shots in a single season, which is still the record today. And wow. becoming an all-star and having a 12-year NBA career, because I knew my job. So the point number one of the four commitments of a winning team, which is the name of my presentation and my book, is called Knowing Your Job. What is that one thing you're excellent at? What do you need to be focused on? What do you need to let go of that's preventing you from succeeding? And how well are you leveraging your skills and your strengths now in your position with your company? How could you leverage them more? And I go through a little exercise of how to ascertain that. But it was a life-changing moment from the standpoint of, I was running around trying to do all these things on the basketball court, trying to be good at everything. And he said, no. He said, just do this. And he was, mm-hmm. and he was right. So that's one example of one of the points in the book which is, you know, focusing on that one thing you're great at and letting go of the rest.
You know, something that we coach our students around is choosing who they're going to listen to. And, you know, allowing those kind of moments to feed their writing soul, you know, for years. And I mean, I had one with a top literary agent who was reading a page one of mine, and she goes, and you can write. And I'm telling you, my whole life changed in that moment, because I lived on that, you know.
Yeah, there's no question you've got to find the right people to listen to. And, you know, I always look and say, well, who's out there that's done it before me? Who's been really successful? Those are the kind of people I have a tendency to pay more attention to. There's a lot of free advice out there. Mm-hmm. And so just like the speaking coach that I found, you know, I she'd worked with some other top speakers, and she said, I can help you find your message, not just another motivational message. I can help you find your message that resonates with you and will resonate with the audience. So that's an example. And going through this you know, book writing process, same thing, trying to find people that could help me, ghostwriters, et cetera, who got me. And that was been a challenge, to say the least.
Yeah.
But I know what my message is, and I know where the point of resonation is. And it was a matter of trying to figure out how to get that out of a speech and into a book in a kind of a wider, deeper format.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about some of your experiences working with at-risk kids. That's definitely something that's near and dear to our heart. And
Hearts, plural, but really kind of one heart.
Yeah.
Michael and I have one heart. We're actually sitting here holding hands while we're interviewing you.
That's good. I think the greatest challenge in our country is really the youth. I mean, our educational system needs a lot of work. We're falling behind internationally in terms of our ability to compete. And I think beyond that, the very fabric of our country is being challenged because the next generation that's coming up does not have the skill sets to be successful and are going to flounder and are going to rely more on other people to help them because of the way the system works right now. And when it comes to at-risk kids, they live in tendency is they live in smaller communities. They're very, very narrow view of the world. And, most of them will end up like their cousins or brothers or uncles who are really the only people they have in their life that they've looked up to, regardless of whether those mentors, for lack of a better term, are on the straight and narrow or not. Mm-hmm. And so when I started doing basketball camps, I wanted to go after that population, the ones that couldn't afford to come. And I wanted to share with them not only basketball skills, but some of the skills that coaches and teachers had taught me. And I teamed up with a friend of mine named Brent Snyder, who worked for the Covey Leadership Center, and he'd been a pro football player. He played quarterback for the Bears. And we developed this model where the kids would come to the camp and we'd get basketball instruction. Then we'd also have classroom instruction with some of the principals of the Covey Leadership Center. And we found that to be pretty effective. And so we expanded it to more of a year-round focus where we tried to get the same kids from the same social agencies. So these kids came from the Housing Authority, from different Boys and Girls Clubs, things like that, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. And we gave those agencies a number of scholarships. They said, you pick the kids you think are going to most benefit from this program. We spent all year raising the money for that program and then tried to provide experiences for them that would give them an opportunity to sit back for a minute and think about where they're going, what they're doing, what does success look like, how are you going to get there, who are the people you're hanging out with, etc. And we did that for a long time. So best success story was, and I wrote about this in my book, we had this young lady named Candace who was from Ogden, Utah, kind of an inner city area, brothers and uncles in jail, pretty tough gangbanger kid who came to us as about an 11 or 12 year old. And we worked with her, and she became kind of a favorite of the staff. Everybody kind of kept checking in on her and tried to get her to as many things as possible. And over a period of 3 or 4 years, she became kind of a star student at our camp. She would win all the awards and became sort of a leader of other young girls. And then I think she got to be 16 or so, and she kind of, fell off the radar. And I'd ask people for a year or two after that, have you heard from Candace? Do you know where she is? And I don't know. I heard she's taking some classes at Weber State. And only about 8 years later, I get a friend request on Facebook one day from this lady, from Candace. And I'm like, wow, Candace, I haven't heard from you ever. Like, how's it going? Like, what are you up to? How's life? And she didn't respond for a couple days. And then she just sent me a photo of a diploma with a master's in social work from the University of Utah.
Oh, wow.
I was like, okay.
Awesome.
If we did nothing else other than that in the 8 or 9, well, I know we ran those programs for 14 years, I guess. That was worth it right there. Because they do get it. But the at-risk youth and a lot of youth just don't have those mentors and people in place around them to show them what it takes to be successful. Everybody's working so hard just to survive that the aspect of being an apprentice or, that someone else is there to kind of show you the ropes is just something that I think is sadly lacking in our nation.
Mm-hmm. So let's focus on your book a little bit more. Tell us the title. Do you have a working title or is it?
Yeah, the working title, which I think it will remain, is The Four Commitments of a Winning Team, because that's the same as my presentation. And really the a lot of speakers use a book as their source of credibility, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah.
And starting out being a former NBA player, you know, I didn't have to necessarily have that right off the bat.
That is kind because, of your source of credibility right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I mean, I show some NBA highlights on video and we're good to go.
Yeah.
Because when you walk on stage, people are always going to ask, like, well, who is this guy? What's he going to tell me? And what could he possibly know about my life, right? And that's what you're up against every time you walk on a stage. So the NBA obviously gave me that credibility. As time went on, I really wanted to provide something for people that goes a little bit deeper, gives them a little more information, something they could take home. And so I started this idea of writing a book about 8 years ago, and I've messed around with it for on and off for a long, long time. Never got it finished. Never, mm-hmm. You know, I just got frustrated with it. It really has been a real emotional roller coaster for me because I wanted it to be really good, and yet I'm not a great writer, and yet I couldn't seem to find the right people to work with to put it together in a timely manner. And I can't tell you how many times I've thrown it against the wall and just say, you know, forget it. Like, I'm just going to go speak. I'm not going to worry about the book. So I've been very frustrated with the writing process. And even this summer, I thought I was getting closer. I'd worked with a couple of ghostwriters, and then it just didn't work out. It just wasn't, it was clunky. It didn't feel right. It wasn't my story. They weren't really getting me. And so I met this woman named Angie Black, who's from here in Utah. And we had a conversation one day, and she said, well, you know, I've written a couple of novels. And she said, I'd be happy to take a look at your book. I won't charge anything. And just let me see if I can do something with it. And she said, I'm a basketball fan. My dad was a big jazz fan, Utah Jazz fan. And so she said, let me just take a look. I said, okay, sure. What the heck? Go for it. Have fun. So about a week later, she sends back like a 3-page introduction to the book. And I'm reading it. And my wife, Terry, who's a great editor, she's looking at it. We're looking at each other going, this is pretty darn good. Mm. And so we hooked up with her. And she, in a matter of a month, went through the book, cleaned it up, created segues, created threads, and really kind of pulled this thing together. Now it's a product that I'm really pretty darn proud of, that it's something that's really, and it happened very quickly. So all these years of pain and strife and suffering and everything else that has gone into this process, number one, my wife has been the driving force of saying, hey, let's get this thing going, and been out there looking around. And then number two, you know, we come across this lady, Angie, and she completely transformed the whole experience. And I'd like to write book number two with her, because I think we've got a good relationship. And like I said, I'm good at being interviewed. I'm not so great at writing, but I have a lot of stories if you ask me the right questions. So we record the conversations, we get them transcribed, and then go back and feed them in the book. It's been quite an experience, but at least now we finally got the manuscript finished. Thank you, Jesus.
Yeah, really.
Are you self-publishing? Are you traditionally publishing?
Well, having been a speaker for so many years, I've met a lot of other speakers who've written books. I've heard every story about the publishing world. And as we all know, in the last 10 years, it's completely changed.
Yeah.
And my objective for the book is primarily to sell to the people I speak for. Because mm-hmm. when I'm on stage 60 or 70 times a year, I have an opportunity, you know, for people to buy a book for their swag bag at their conference or whatever it might be. And so I opted for self-publishing because, you know, getting a small advance for a book and then giving up all your rights didn't appeal to me. So I've gone with a company in Austin called Greenleaf Books. And they kind of turned.
We're familiar with them.
They kind of turned publishing on their ear. And Clint Greenleaf, who started that company, I met at an entrepreneurs conference many years ago. So I've gone that route thus far, and they will publish the book. And I'm still looking at editors, and you know, they do everything. They're turnkey. You just pay them up front, but then you own everything at the end, and you can buy your final product very cheaply. So that's been the attraction thus far in working with them. And they've been great. They've got a whole team of professionals down there. And my wife, Terry, and I have been down there a couple of times visiting with them. And of course, they've been calling me like, where's the book? Where's the book? Where's the book? So now they have it. They finally have it. And we're on our way.
And I would say, you know, as we talk to different people who are considering their publishing pathways, you are the perfect case study for self-publishing.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody who's already got a platform.
You've already got your platform mm-hmm. in place, and you've got a way then to reach your audience Absolutely. Self-publishing makes so much sense.
Yeah. And then if we get distribution, great. If people like it, great. And we are going to strategically put a launch date together to see what we can do about trying to move up on a list or two, you know, and maybe get some more credibility for the book. But again, the end result is over the long term, I know that most of my long-term sales will come from the people I speak to.
Right. Well, congratulations on finishing the book. That's exciting.
It is exciting. Thank you.
That has been a quite a journey, hasn't it?
It has. And I know the first one is the hardest, but I think that given what I've learned and am learning as I go through this publishing process, I think that hopefully I can write another one and it won't take me 8 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So what's next for you, Mark?
Well, I think 2018 is more of the same. It's getting the book over the finish line with in terms of being published and the marketing and everything that needs to go on around that. It's more speaking. I've already got quite a full slate of speeches for next year, and I enjoy doing that. It's a lot of fun. I travel a lot, and I'm in a good spot right now. I feel like I'm in my groove, So whatever comes out of that, I think, you know, this book process, I think, is going to open up other things. And one thing I've learned about the writing process is that as you get things finished and complete, you go back and edit and get things out there, other things open up. You know, just like my presentation, I've been able to turn it into 3 or 4 different breakout sessions. And mm-hmm. you can take, when you get some real solid truths that you're working with, you can find other ways to leverage them. And so I'm excited in anticipation of what's going to come out of this experience. Like, what's the next project going to be? What's the next book? Or am I going to write another speech on, you know, how to be a great coach or whatever it might be?
Right.
That will be a natural offshoot of this process and not something that I have to go out and recreate the wheel. It's like I've got the structure in place now. And so now how can we add something else to the pipeline?
We're excited too. We're excited to see what comes down the pike as well.
Yeah, for sure. So if any of our listeners would like to get a hold of you to book you for a speaking gig or purchase your book, what's the best way to do that? Through your website?
Yeah, through my website, 7foot4.com. At 7foot4.com, I've got a newsletter sign up.
Oh, that's
there
great.
That you can sign up for, and that's probably the best way to stay in touch.
Excellent. We'll have a link to that in our show notes. And thank you so much for your time today. If you could just give us and our listeners one final piece of advice for those who are writing and living their stories, what would that be?
Hmm. Well, I think first is to get all the stories written down. I'm amazed at how many speakers I talk to that I say, how many of you have written down every word of your speech? And only a handful raise their hands. And I would say go back and look for the juice, the stuff that you can really feel, the stuff that really makes a difference. I think that's the good stuff. And through my process, we came up with lots of stories and lots of points, and then went back through and culled through them to find the best stuff. And I think sometimes we get hung up thinking, I've got to write great stuff all the time. No, you just have to write. And if you write enough stuff and you put it together, it's a lot easier to go back afterwards and pull out the jewels and the golden nuggets.
The magic happens in revision. Does not happen when you are dumping out that first draft.
Right. So just dump.
Well, Mark, it has been an honor talking with you today.
Yes, truly.
And we are certainly excited for your book to come out. And we will look forward to that with great anticipation. And thank you, sir, for what you've given your life to. It is awesome sharing this planet with you.
Well, thank you. It's fun to be here. And like everybody else, I'm just trying to make my own little difference in my own little way. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe so that you get each new episode as it comes out. You can find all of our episodes and show notes at calliopepodcast.com. Don't forget to shoot some stars our way if you like the show.